What happens when the golden children of American aristocracy decide to burn it all down? We Were Liars opens with a family that seems to have everything. Old money, a private island, the kind of effortless privilege that turns heads at country clubs. The Sinclairs are tall, merry, and rich, blessed with athletic builds and trust funds that stretch back generations. But beneath the monogrammed towels and carefully maintained smiles lurks something rotten. This isn't just a story about wealthy people behaving badly. It's a psychological unraveling that forces us to question memory itself, to wonder how well we truly know the people we love, and to confront what happens when the pressure to be perfect becomes unbearable. Beechwood Island sits off the Massachusetts coast, home to the Sinclair family's carefully curated summers. Patriarch Harris Sinclair built separate houses for his three daughters, Windermere, Redgate, and Cuddledown. The family mantra echoes through every conversation. No one is a criminal. No one is an addict. No one is a failure. This isn't optimism. It's erasure. When Cadence's father can't maintain the Sinclair smile after his divorce, he vanishes from family conversation. At the heart of this world are the Liars, Cadence, her cousins Johnny and Mirren, and Gat Patil, the nephew of Aunt Carrie's partner Ed. Though not blood-related, Gat has summered with the family since age 8. They're the only authentic relationship in a family built on performance. But Gat's presence carries weight beyond friendship. His deep brown skin and black wavy hair mark him as perpetually outside the Sinclair circle, no matter how many summers he spends on their island. Summer 15 unfolds like a fever dream. Cadence falls desperately in love with Gat, their days melting into sun-warmed rocks, poetry exchanges, and whispered conversations. They share books, Salinger, Baldwin, Bronte, Plath, understanding each other with the profound intensity of first love. Yet their romance exists within complicated dynamics. Harris refuses to call Gat by name, addressing him only as young man, a seemingly casual slight that reinforces his outsider status with surgical precision. The summer is haunted by Tipper Sinclair's recent death. Her belongings remain frozen at Claremont, monogrammed soap, pressed napkins, wooden spoons in precise places. The family maintains an unspoken agreement to never mention her name. Only Gat, unbound by Sinclair traditions of selective memory, dares reference the departed naturally. Behind the perfect facade, the three Sinclair daughters reveal themselves as women trapped in dependency, completely reliant on Harris's approval and money. They engage in desperate competitions for his favor, bitter arguments over jewelry, manipulative positioning of their children. Wine appears at lunch, cocktails start earlier, and bottles accumulate as they struggle to maintain composure. Workers discover Cadence in late July, curled in fetal position on the tiny beach, half submerged in frigid Atlantic waters. Her memory holds only fragments, plummeting through dark water, glimpsing granite foundations, experiencing peculiar numbness. Hospital stays treat severe hypothermia and suspected head injury. 6 weeks later, devastating migraines begin. A truck rolling over the bones of my neck and head. The vertebrae break, the brains pop and ooze. 1,000 flashlights shine in my eyes. Doctors diagnose post-traumatic headaches from traumatic brain injury. More painful than physical trauma is Gat's complete silence. Gat bailed when I got hurt becomes her mantra of abandonment. The accident creates a 2-year separation from Beechwood. During summer 16, her father orchestrates a European tour, preventing her return. Though she maintains cheerful emails to her cousins, their consistent lack of response speaks volumes. Academic performance plummets, friendships wither, leaving her increasingly isolated. Summer 17 brings shocking changes. Claremont House has vanished, replaced by sleek glass and iron with a Japanese garden. The beloved maple tree is gone. The Liars greet her enthusiastically, but something feels wrong. They've taken over Cuddledown, refusing family meals, preferring isolation. Determined to recover lost memories, Cadence creates a wall of graph paper documenting fragments, s'mores, swimming, Marin's chipped nail polish. She adds questions. Why was she swimming alone? Where were her clothes? Strange behaviors emerge. Mirren rarely leaves Cuddledown, claiming persistent cold. Johnny watches British comedies and invents pointless games. Cuddledown falls into disarray with dirty dishes and broken glass. Through recovered memories, Cadence uncovers toxic family dynamics. During summer 15, the Sinclair daughters fought viciously over their mother's possessions, from valuable antiques to trivial items. When they challenged his authority, Harris calmly announced his intention to leave a substantial portion of his fortune to Harvard, demonstrating complete control through financial leverage. As summer 17 progresses, memories return. Cadence recalls the hospital, her hands and feet bandaged, not from swimming, but from burns. The devastating truth emerges. Two summers ago, Gat, Mirren, and Johnny died in a house fire at Claremont. The liars she's been with all summer aren't real. They're ghosts or figments helping her process guilt and grief. The horror deepens. Cadence and the liars planned to burn Claremont as rebellion against family dysfunction. Drunk on wine, they convinced themselves they were doing something heroic, taking down the patriarchy. Their plan went catastrophically wrong. Cadence soaked the kitchen first instead of last. After lighting the study, she heard Johnny screaming upstairs. The back door stuck, forcing her through flames. Outside, she couldn't find the others. The basement stairs were engulfed, the upper stairwell collapsed. The family's golden retrievers also perished, shut in an upstairs bedroom. Cadence catalogs her fatal mistakes, soaking the kitchen first, overwetting books, not setting a specific time, not staying together. She killed her darlings when all she wanted was freedom from constriction and prejudice. She mourns each individually. Johnny, who wanted to run marathons and eat fancy cakes. Mirren, who dreamed of seeing the Congo and having a yellow rose wedding. Gat, her brave, thoughtful Gat, who will never finish the 100 best novels or become the great man he might have been. At Cuddledown, Johnny appears one last time, explaining they can't stay much longer. It's getting harder, especially for Mirren. When asked where they'll go, he explains it's like a rest or nothing, admitting he's tired and just wants to be done. After tearful goodbyes, Mirren advising, "Be a little kinder than you have to," Gat kisses Cadence one last time. The three liars run into the sea, swim past the cove into open ocean, dive beneath bright water, and disappear. Memory serves as both villain and savior. Cadence's selective amnesia protected her from unbearable truth, but prevented processing grief and guilt. Only by recovering painful memories can she begin healing. In giving away her possessions, she unconsciously attempts atonement, rejecting Sinclair values that contributed to disaster. The novel ends not with resolution, but with possibility. Cadence will never escape consequences, but she can choose to live by Mirren's final advice. Using a Sharpie, Cadence writes Mirren's parting words on her hands: left, be, right, kinder. Carrying forward the only wisdom that matters when everything else has burned away.